Hey, Twim Nation, this is Josie Gleave. I'm a contributing writer to the website, but here today to introduce something a little different. I've put together a three-part mini-series to add to your weekly Twim listening. So this isn't your roundup of news, but instead is an exploration of motherhood. This is episode one. I hope you enjoy. You know how on Mother's Day, a few men in the ward walk around after sacrament meeting, passing out a little treat to the mothers in the congregation? It's usually chocolate or something with flowers. Maybe not every ward does this, but I've seen it in Arizona, Sydney, and London, and I'd wager a bet Utah does it too. Every Mother's Day since I turned 18, I've been offered this treat. Sometimes I took it because church used to be 3 hours and I'd get peckish. Sometimes I'd tell them no thanks. I'm not a mother. I never meant for this to be awkward or to put some poor guy in the position of offering the chocolate to me anyway for the sake of inclusivity. It just was a fact. I do not have children. In Relief Society lessons and general conference talks, leaders have addressed motherhood as a calling for all women, whether or not they have children. In 2001, Sherry Du gave a talk entitled, Are We Not All Mothers? She said this, Motherhood is more than bearing children, though it certainly is that. It is the essence of who we are as women. It defines our very identity, our divine stature and nature, and the unique traits our Father gave to us. For many women, this is a comforting idea. Motherhood is intertwined with our divine womanhood. And yet it is confusing to others, myself included. We've been told that you are still a mother to those in your ward. You are an example, a teacher, or maybe you listen and comfort those who need someone to talk to. Those are things a mother does do, but what makes it mothering? Isn't that being Christ-like or being a friend? You're an example or a teacher or a good friend in those moments, but not necessarily their mother. So I've been wondering, what definition are we operating with in the church? What makes a woman a mother? In an attempt to answer this question, I spoke with many women who have all had different experiences with motherhood, which makes me think, maybe there's no one way to be a mother. But then, what is motherhood? Maureen likes to say she's a true breed Kenyan. Her family roots go back for generations in the country. She moved to Australia for university to become a doctor, and there she met her husband, Chris, a fellow medical student. Maureen worked as a CMO, a career medical officer, in a private hospital before starting a family. I really look up to Maureen. She's who I think of when I imagine what a supermom would look like. At least from the outside looking in, she's even-tempered, patient, and generous with her time. She's the mom who seems to have it all figured out. So I talked to her about my questions of what defines a mother. But she started the conversation out with a dilemma she's currently facing that I think many mothers will relate to. She has 4 kids ranging from 6 to 16, and she is ready to go back to work. But that goal isn't exactly going according to plan. As a quick note, you'll hear a few names without introduction. Those are Maureen's kids.
So I've been full-time stay-at-home mom since having Eli. And the last 2.5 years, I've been trying to get a job. I've been trying to get back into the workforce. And I'm realizing how, I don't know if I was just naive before or things have changed, I'm not sure, but how difficult it is getting back into the workforce after being away for more than, well, at that time it was 3 years when I started looking for another position. And I thought it was just medicine, but just speaking to a lot of moms at school, it's crazy how often I hear the same story. you know, just educated, intelligent women who now have time on their hands, who want to contribute in some way, who want to go back to work, who are finding it really difficult to get back. I think there's a fear. There seems to be a fear to hire. I'm not quite sure if it's the fear of women with children. I don't know if that's what it is, and feeling that women's first priority is are the children, or if it's just the time away and the I don't know. It's the lack of support, I guess, is what I'm feeling. The lack of support to get us back into the workforce in terms of training programs. I've had to organize a lot of my own training coming back. I would think, because there are a lot of women in medicine now, that there would be programs. And unfortunately, the feeling I get from talking to a lot of the bureaucrats is that if this time had been invested in studying or in doing a fellowship, going overseas and all that kind of thing, then it wouldn't be so much of an issue. I'm just so surprised that just raising a family is not considered a big deal, really. It really just looks like I was just bumming around. That's the impression I get, you know.
You're doing so many different jobs as a mother, and especially for you with medicine, like, you are completely responsible for four little human beings, like, health and well-being. You know, you have to keep them alive. You're their nurse and their doctor. How is that not a qualification?
That's right. And they're psychiatrists sometimes, I feel. It's just not a very valued occupation. In fact, most of the time, it's not even really considered as an occupation, I feel, in the professional world, which is sad. I don't think we're in an age where we can have everything. And I think even just leaving work for a while, just not just from my peers, but even from some of my family, I got a lot of pushback, because it's like, oh, well, you're an educated woman. You know, these women fought for us to be able to go to work and support ourselves and have that security and be independent. But I don't believe that that's what they fought for. I believe what they fought for was for us to have a choice. And those choices change. So there was a time in my life, my choice was to stay home because my children needed me. And in fact, with the other girls, I always went back to work after about 6 months, but I've never been full time. Since I had Aruna, I have not worked full time. So that's just a choice that I made. And the 2 or 3 days a week was suiting me just fine, because it meant that I didn't have casualties at home while I was working in casualty, kind of thing. So that worked for me then. But now that Eli is full-time at school, I feel like I've got a lot to contribute. And when they grow up and leave, there's a lot I feel that I can give.
Did you always want to be a mother?
I think so. More so when I joined the church. So everyone was really shocked when I got married. I got married quite early, when I was 24. And as I mentioned earlier, I hadn't finished uni, and my parents were horrified. But also quite surprised, because I was always the one like, this is what I want to do. I had so many dreams for my life in terms of career, and, you know, and I would always say, I'm not getting married a day before 30. You know, I just did not understand why people would, you know, and I always kind of saw, and this is probably a bit cultural, a bit of naivete as well, I'm not sure. I always saw marriage as some kind of prison, because now you're with this person, now you can't do anything. And it's since joining the church and learning more about the family and about our purpose here that I think my mind was changed slowly. until I got to the point where I thought, yeah, this is what I'm meant to do. This is my role. This is an important role. It's not everything, but it's definitely an important, it needs to play an important role in my life, this opportunity to become a mother.
One of the things that I've always noticed about you, and this is probably just an assumption from the outside looking in, but I've always been impressed that you never seem frazzled as a mother. Like, do you even stress?
I am getting much better with that. Having had children, I realize now how they're here to challenge you and make you better. I have found I am more willing to improve for my children than I was for myself. And so I feel that with each child that I've had, I have been a better mom. And having teenagers especially, and just learning to navigate that really tricky area, you know, where you kind of feel like sometimes you're dealing with an adult, sometimes you're dealing with a child, and knowing which one you're dealing with at that particular moment has been interesting. And Aruna, our firstborn, is quite a strong-minded girl, and she's really just been good for me to see how I need to let go and how I need to allow agency, that without agency they cannot learn. I can't control everything. They need to know they've got choices and their consequences, whether good or bad, depending on what choices they make. So yeah, so I don't know. I think my kids would disagree. I think they would say that I still get frazzled, but definitely not as much as before, and definitely I'm definitely not sweating the small things now.
How did you learn to become that type of mother? It sounds very much like you're learning things on the go, and that kind of stresses me out. I relate a little bit more to your mother of that perfectionist attitude, and also feeling like I need to know how to do the job before I do it.
I think dispelling the myth of maternal instinct, I actually don't know if there's such a thing. I think maternal instinct is something you learn, not something you're born with. You can never learn to be a mom, because each of your children is so different. And so I find the mom that Aruna needs is not the mom that Maya needs. The mom that Eli needs is not the mom that Imani needs. And then again, not only is it different according to the child, it's different according to the age. So you're like constantly having to change the way you do things, and finding that one thing that worked before 2 years later will not have an impact, or might even have a negative impact. So just being really present and listening, and not trying to apply a global solve to every problem. And just knowing the children. And you can't do that unless you spend time with them.
How do you feel satisfaction as a mother?
Whenever they show kindness, I feel like I get a window of what Heavenly Father feels when we are kind to each other, when we love our neighbor. When I see my children be kind to each other, this warmth that rises within me, I feel must be somewhat similar to what Heavenly Father feels. You know, when he says we glorify him, I feel glorified when my children make the right choices, when they think past themselves, when they do things that they didn't think they could do or other people told them they couldn't do, when they think big, you know, just outside the normal, simple ideas of the world, you know, when they come up with big ideas and big thoughts, that to me is a sign that we're doing something good and something positive, and that if we can keep on nurturing that goodness in them, it could lead to greatness, like not greatness in a, you know, superficial worldly sort of sense, but greatness in terms of allowing them to be who they really were meant to be. So I get a lot of, I get my satisfaction from that.
I wanted to ask a bit about how you define motherhood and how we define that role with our church lenses on. Do you think that a woman is still a mother even when she doesn't have children of her own either yet, or if she's never able to?
Oh, resounding yes. And I say that because of my experience with my best friend's mom, who was a mother to me growing up, another mother to me. So my mom, as I said, you know, brilliant woman, very hardworking, always had her own businesses. I don't actually remember her ever working for anyone. She'd always, you know, just have an idea, go out, work hard, make it happen, you know, put us through good schools as a single mom, put us through uni as a single mom. So she's just an amazing woman, but she's a different type of mom. So she was the empowering sort of mom. You know, you've got to get educated. You've got to be able to support yourself. You don't rely on a man to support you. You're better than that. You can change the world. You know, that kind of mom. And then I had my best friend's mom, who was the nurturing mom, who was the, take these cookies for Maureen to school mom, or, you know, when we were over for a sleepover in front of the fire, asking questions, encouraging me to talk. So I feel like I kind of had two really great moms. I was really lucky like that. And I was able to see from this other mom, I got a lot I learned a lot about being nurturing, you know, being nurturing, and about routine, the importance of routine in children's lives, because my life at home was a bit haphazard. Because my mom was away a lot, we were just kind of left to, in terms of the way we spent time, we were pretty much left to our own devices, although there were no devices at that time. But you know what I mean. I thank her all the time for what she has taught me and being a mother to me. So I definitely don't think that you need to birth someone to be a mother to them. And the word mother to me is this wholesome word that encompasses not just the physical side of it, being pregnant and giving birth, but also the nurturing side, the teacher, you know, anyone who's got that goal to take care of the next generation, to me, is a mother. It's the wisdom of generations before you. I think when you're passing that wisdom on, you're being a mother to someone.
Passing on the wisdom of generations. this feels right. And it feels less about one person bearing the burden of educating a child all on their own. A mother has knowledge given to her from her mother and her mother's mother throughout time. Maureen is a pretty spontaneous mother, ready to change tactics at any moment. I think this is why she said you can never learn to be a mom. It's a job that's constantly changing. Is this what makes it so hard to define? It seems like so much of motherhood is about getting out of your own way, going back to the basics, you know, be a good person, love your kid. Is it that simple? I wanted to talk to someone who could help me understand how each motherhood experience really is different, because I know hers is different. Some people might even say tragic, and yet she exemplifies the love of a mother with grace and understanding. Sarah is originally from Taiwan. She moved to Australia for her master's degree in international law with the intention of returning when she graduated. Instead, she met her husband, Joseph, at an institute activity, and she stayed. I started out my interview with Sarah by saying that she's a mother of three. Sarah was quick to correct me and say she's actually a mother of four. Her first pregnancy was a miscarriage. I did not know this. Miscarriages are more common than we may think, but they are often sad experiences endured in silence. This additional information adds to the part of Sarah's story that I do know and wanted her to share. Her second child, Christopher, was a very special guy. He was born with Down syndrome and several critical medical conditions. I knew him as a friend, a little boy who I sang to in nursery. He was usually barefoot, wearing dark trousers with suspenders and a white shirt for church. He loved all the songs I sang to him. Mostly, if you're happy and you know it, clap your hands. Which we added extra verses to so the song wouldn't end. This is Sarah's story.
During the pregnancy, it actually went quite well. Nothing shows any, not different from other baby. But once he was born, all the problems starting, you know, coming out.
Okay. Well, so what were their problems?
You know, in the first 24 hours, baby is supposed to pass some like output from their tummy. And he didn't, and also he didn't show any desire to have some milk. So doctor started to suspect that he has Down syndrome. But it took a while to confirm this diagnosis. On the third day, Christopher was quickly transferred to ICU in the children's hospital because his temperature dropped very quickly. And when he was in ICU, he started vomiting lots of green stuff, and doctor not sure why. So it took a long time and lots of tests, exam, and also biopsy to find the result that Christopher, like in all his digest system, the nerve of the digest system are missing. So that means he cannot digest any food, even not even water.
How is he surviving?
They actually give him a special, they call it TPN. It's a special man-made nutrition.
Okay.
The full name is total parental nutrition. So they gave him through the vein. It's kind of injection.
Okay.
24 hours a day.
Yeah.
So it's, the injection keep running. Yeah. And we couldn't hold him in the first month's time. He was not attached to all the lines and tubes in the special cube, you know, in the ICU. So for whole month, we can just watching him, and yeah, we cannot like hold him. Yeah, it's very yeah, it was very sad.
What were the doctor's recommendations at that point?
In the beginning, actually, Christopher stayed in the hospital for 7.5 months before he got discharged, because all the hospital team, they were involved in to kind of figure out how to keep him alive. And it was very struggling. So they didn't think it's ideal for Christopher get discharged from hospital. But it just took too long, and me and my husband really want to take Christopher home. And so doctor started to discuss with us, like, we can take him home, but our life will be very, very different. There were two options. Doctor mentioned about, first of all, me and my husband need to take a very special medical training. We need to kind of live in the hospital for 6 weeks' time and have the training to learn how to use all those medical equipment and how to do all the medical caring things for Christopher, like injection or how to deal with the TPN. Yeah, all the things. And the second option is they were kind of stop the TPN thing and just give him the liquid, and eventually Christopher's life will end. So of course, being a mom, I haven't seen Christopher smile. I haven't seen him go to school, kind of all these things. I believe miracle will happen one day. So me and my husband, we really kind of trust ourselves. We think we can handle that. As long as we get a proper training, we can take him home and start our new family life with him. So we told the doctor and all the team our decision. So we started to, you know, have their special training in the hospital. And after 6 weeks' time, we passed the test, and then we finally took him home. And yeah, it was an exciting day for us.
How long did it take for you to feel like you guys had a routine or that things were kind of working?
Oh, to be very honest, not that time. Our life keeps changing. And because Christopher, you know, when he grow, new issue keep coming out. So we, in the beginning, we can adjust our life a little bit. And then once we get used to that, new problem comes out and we need to, you know, adjust our life again. But we kind of thinking that we accept that we won't have like a normal routine as other parents do. So as long as we don't give us pressures to have like a normal routine, I feel like much easier to handle the life. You know, there's no standard way to, how do I describe that? Like, I can be a very special mom just for Christopher, instead of, you know, follow all the standard or other routine that other parents have. I found it's easier to just think about Christopher instead of put the pressures on myself. I starting to telling myself kind of, this is my baby and he's no different from other kids. What he needs is love. As long as someone loves him, he wouldn't have any problem. He can go through everything just like, yeah, normal kids. I believe as long as a person is dearly loved, he would be the happiest person. And I want my baby to be a happy baby.
after you kind of got settled with Christopher, when did you decide, or when did you have your next baby?
Oh, Christopher became a big brother when he was 15 months old. Yeah, when doctors started to give us a clear plan of discharging him from hospital, me and my husband make a decision that we need to start trying to have next baby because we want Christopher to have siblings. I think that's the best thing to have siblings. No, I personally grew up with three sisters. So for me, siblings are always the best companion for me during the grow up process. Once we start trying, very surprisingly and quickly, yeah, we got the good news.
How old was Christopher when he passed away?
Christopher was 6 years old when he passed away in the school in his favorite arts class. Yeah, he was doing some painting and it happened very suddenly. He looks just very normal as he even in the morning or when we send him to the school bus, he waved to us and looked happy because he really loved school. Yeah, so yeah, there was no sign, no. So it was big shock for us when we received the news. And well, yeah. So yeah. So he had 6 years life with us. And he passed away due to the clotting in his big vein in the lungs. So he stopped breathing very quickly and his heart stopped beating. Yeah, he kind of passed away in probably less than 3 seconds. So no, good thing is no, there's no suffering. So, and he was doing his favorite thing. So for me, it probably the best ending of his life. After he passed away, life getting way too quiet. We kind of need to adjust our life, to a very quiet and easy life. We're thinking, yeah, we need to have another kid. So, yeah. So this year we have new baby. Sometimes when I look back and thinking all the memory we have with him, it's like a little slice of the heaven, the happiness and the joy he bring to us is nothing can compare. I feel like he's from heaven and his soul is so pure and so special. He didn't need to do anything. I just need to watching him and then made me happy and made me smile. He's a very sweet boy. So pleasure to be his mom and have the opportunity to be with him for 6 years time. It was really a big blessing for me. I still remember on the day he passed away when I stand beside him, I felt I really lost someone like forever. And that feeling kind of killing me. I couldn't even stand up. that feeling of loss is really severe. I couldn't even handle that. But once I had the kind of voice in my heart and telling me that this is just a temporary separate, I will see him again. I will not hold him again. And I will have fun with him again. I will see him smile again. This is a very powerful things for me and help me to face that difficult time. So yeah, it's really important for me to kind of remind myself I can be Christopher's mom for all eternity, and I didn't lose him kind of forever. Being an eternal mother is a great, great motivation for me to become a better person. I feel like motherhood is incredible. Motherhood is all about love, but it's incredibly powerful. I found love is strong enough to change a people's life. Like no miserable person is miserable when he's dearly loved by a mother. That's how I really feel from all this process raising Christopher.
Sarah's motherhood is profound. She gave up any expectation of being what she thought a normal mom was supposed to be and decided she wouldn't let herself feel those pressures. She was just going to be the mother Christopher needed and now her two daughters need. You can feel her pure love. It is an inspiration to me. I wonder if that's what motherhood is, that the definition can encompass all women, but each woman mothers differently. In Maureen's case, she felt like she had two mothers, her own, her best friend's mother, and she's comfortable with bestowing the title to any woman who teaches and contributes to the next generation. Sarah is another kind of mother again, who has been entrusted to care for four special spirits, even though two have already returned to their heavenly parents. So what is motherhood? Do I have an answer? I do still feel that being a mother involves birth, and I'm not sure that all women who do not have children of their own feel entirely comfortable with the title. Yet I am willing to see the side that allows for all women, no matter their situation, to be mothers. I think as women, we are connected to God and therefore to our heavenly parents' love. Maybe we are channels for that love, thus allowing us to mother outside of giving birth. Maybe there's something Christ-like, that is to say God-like, in motherhood. In 1998, President Thomas S. Monson gave a talk called Behold Thy Mother. In his closing, and now mine, I'd like to echo his words. One cannot forget mother and remember God. One cannot remember mother and forget God. Why? Because these two sacred persons, God and mother, partners in creation, in love, in sacrifice, in service, are as one.